Blog Talk Radio.
Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Forgive me there. Welcome to Personal Transformation. It's Thursday evening. It's darn cold outside. I'm a couple of minutes late, or actually just barely a minute late, but forgive me. Tonight's topic is going to be about transformation, the ups and downs. Deb and I will be talking. Obviously, I've pre-recorded this, but nonetheless, I'm only too happy to share it with you. And let me first point out, okay, I'm only offering peer support only. I'm not a therapist or a doctor, PhD, anything like that whatsoever at all. I'm only offering you peer support and my views in regards to my recovery regarding sexual abuse. So again, welcome tonight. All I'll do is I'm going to go ahead with what Deb and I have been talking about, or what I told you the topic was about. I'll get back to you a little later on about our announcements and stuff going on. But again, thank you for joining me, and I'm going to get this going right now. Here we go. Good morning, Deb. Happy Saturday.
Good morning, Stuart. Happy Saturday morning.
We're sitting here once again, which is fantastic. I so look forward to this. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about transformation. More on the positive side than on the negative side, but you must also understand the negative side in order to get to the positive side. But trust me, there is a positive side. We're sitting right here now as a great prime example of what you could be if you put some hard effort into your life.
What is transformation? I guess it's probably to define what transformation is. And certainly, when we think about the word transformation, we are going from something upheaval, you know, something that we perceive as a negative state to a positive or organized or an understanding or a more awareness kind of a state. There is transformation, clearly, that happens when there is a trauma and you shift and your body shuts down and it tries to understand and to heal in that sense. So it can look either way, but certainly when we talk about transformation, we want to talk about moving forward towards the light, as we say here at the Gatehouse, the opposite direction, towards the dark. But listen, in the healing cycle or in transformation, often a person will go further into the darkness.
Oh, yes. In order to move forward, you have to sometimes go backwards in order to move forward, correct?
Absolutely. And hence the saying is, you know, if you're walking through hell, keep on going.
That's right. Yeah. don't let it grab you by the ankles and keep you there.
That's right. And the sad thing is that a lot of people do spend a lot of time in that state. And the thing about sexual abuse or trauma such as sexual abuse.
I like to attest to that very much so.
Yeah. You know, you stay there and you want to forget. Or your subconscious will actually shut you down, so you have no control over that. You are shut down. And for a lot of children, that's what happens, just to survive. They can't fight back. They can't flee. They have no control with that at all. They're overpowered, you know, psychologically or physically. And then the other thing is that you freeze. And I know me, you're freezing, right?
Yeah, basically, emotionally, you shut down.
Yeah, you look like, during the act, for example, I mean, so many people will say, I can't look at fans anymore because I was staring at the fan, or I had one gal that did a trauma relief on that. She was looking at the shelf. Every time she was violated, she tilted her head upwards and there was a shelf there, so she was looking at that shelf the whole time. And then the other thing too is, because the trauma, if you enjoyed it, the pleasure of
the guilt after that.
Yes. And that's the downside, and that's what people try to suppress. I mean, we know about the different systems. Cutting behavior to excessive tattooing to depression.
Types of addictions related to it.
Yeah, and also there's the positive addictions that I call them, which is, I'm so grateful because I think I struggled that. I had an anger buried deep within, I didn't even know what it was. But for myself, it was staying as busy as possible, and I didn't even have flashbacks, but still the subconscious is remembering. So the conscious mind is actively trying to suppress it and to keep yourself busy so you don't actually experience a lot of those things, right? So that was my thing, keep it busy. And even I looked at my schedule for February, and I have, from now, which is the 14th, happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day for those who celebrate it.
Yes. And, you know, I have, I think, 2 days to the end of February where I actually don't have a, you know, I'm not being interviewed on radio, a TV thing. We have the thing on the 21st,
that's
which
right.
is the soul slide.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You're going to be up in St. Clair.
Yeah, so that, there you can do a little sneak.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, here we go.
And we're going to meet a whole bunch of people. I'm looking forward to meeting a bunch of people that I've been talking to on Twitter for the last year and a bit. And they're survivors themselves, and it'd be very interesting to see what kind of fellowship we come up with on that day.
Right, and that's a huge part of the transformation. I think anybody who's gone through it that has gone from a dark place to a place where they at least see some light is that they have connections.
Yeah.
You know, the bonds, the knowing that you're not alone in anything is the path towards change and healing, because you create a new awareness and you become educated via the other people that have been there as well, right?
So, in your travels, or rather not just in your travels, let me rephrase that, but from facilitating to writing your book, what would you say through the transformational struggle of all kinds of evil, what would you say stands out to you more as far as, can we talk about addictions and things like that? What do you find that people seem to tend more to do in regards to, or have you really even ever put any thought process into that, in regards to what kind of negative thing, whether it be like tattooing or drugs or alcohol, do you find anything really particularly stands out in regards to how people react for dealing with that sort of thing?
Suppression is number one.
Suppression. I'm kind of thinking you'd say that, because I just wanted to ask you just so people understand. And I was going to kind of suggest that myself as well, because that's what I've done very well myself. I'm really good at it, actually.
It's kind of like every emotion comes out of love and fear.
Yeah.
I think that every coping strategy, and I haven't given this too much thought, but just from what you're saying, I believe that the coping strategies all come out of wanting to suppress it, because most people, even if there's an angry reaction, that doesn't come till later.
Yeah.
If there's depression,
it
comes later.
Yeah.
Because you can't even at the time. And it also depends on the age of the child, their understanding of what has transpired. Because if you're 14 and somebody grabs you, you know that that's not the way that we participate in our society here, where we are. Some other cultures, that's commonplace to be grabbed, right? But here, it's not. So, but even saying that at a 14-year-old or a 6-year-old in the home, or, you know, at a family function, the first thing is, I guess, you know, it's the denial, like, what's this, what's going on, no, this can't be happening, and then afterwards you either overthink it or you don't want to think about it, and a lot of people do block out. I'm doing a lot of research right now, and it's something very common that people will block out the entire part, and that's what I think of Sylvia Fraser,
in
Unlock the Door, right?
Yeah.
Where she didn't have any recollection of anything, and then other people, through those interviews, and then also through the Gatehouse, being a facilitator now for, gosh, I just realized I've been here for over 3 years now, which is the same as
myself, yeah.
But you hear the same kind of things, and so many people have forgotten
little bits and
parts of what happened. And I had an epiphany the other day. I don't know, I always say, I haven't had the awful experience of having a lot of flashbacks and nightmares, and that. I didn't experience that. It would just pop up every once in a while. There were these things.
To remind you of it.
Exactly. And it would be like, oh, that's so dirty and gross, and I don't want to think about it, so I want to suppress it. Hence, you know, I've gone through a fibroid situation as a woman, and that's where I think it all went to, and I call that my Johnny, and Johnny took care of all the memories for years for me. So Johnny kept growing and growing, and I was like, crap, I need to take care of Johnny, right?
Yeah.
So Johnny got cut off there for a while. And it's interesting because I think that was part of when I started to actually heal, is that acknowledgement and realizing that fibroid existed and knowing the connection. I mean, most people know certain things that happen in your anatomy are connected to your emotions. And all disease, you know, it's the dis-ease with what's going on, so it manifests itself in a physical symptom. That's very common and people know that. But that was part of my realization that, maybe it has had an effect, even if it's a little subtle or it's buried. And that was part of when I started with the self-defense that I teach in working with girls, that's when I started to open up to them and really let's talk about, did something happen to you and don't suppress it. And I would say, you know, something did happen to me. So it was around that time. But it was back to the suppression is that, listen, if you don't suppress part of it, either through numbing techniques or just your subconscious brain taking care of you, you just spin.
You're
a good example of spinning in thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's back to again, like what you said about the nightmares and the flashbacks. I still have them, but yet But at least I can say now, after my time here at the Gatehouse, at least I recognize them, and I know how to ground myself now when I do get them. And I have flashbacks pretty much basically daily. And I really don't honestly believe that it really has anything related to my involvement here, because I'm so involved here as well. I could just be driving down the road and all of a sudden, bang, it just hits me. And the great thing about it, when I talk about recognizing things, for example, now. I'm so good at catching myself now at this, and I'm so good now at grounding myself, but I'm telling you, it's taken a lot of work and practice on my part to try to change that so that, okay, well, I'm driving, for example, or if I'm sitting at home alone, what I'll do is I'll just be sitting there, and I'm trying to be preoccupied, whether I'm surfing on the internet or if I'm watching a movie or something, all of a sudden it just comes up and crops me and smacks me right in the face. Hey, what? Hey, I think you should start thinking about that. And then now, with my what I've had to do, which I've learned from the Gatehouse, and is that I've had to teach myself some kind of grounding to remind myself that, okay, Stu, you don't have to go back to that spot. And I'm telling you, folks, it is not that easy. It takes a lot of work, and I'm forever, ever, I know when I'm with a group, I always remind people how much work is involved in it. It's not a cakewalk. And if you want to be in that place bad enough, you really have to work hard to get yourself out of that. And you have to keep repeating yourself over and over again. I'm talking about like daily now. I'm not talking about once a week or something like that. It just doesn't work that way. I had to, for myself personally, I had to tell myself that every day. As soon as I knew that flashback was coming or I was into it, I had to remind myself, okay, Stu, stop. Think what I'm thinking about here, okay? When I'm talking about thoughts, I'm talking... when I start thinking like that, I'm getting every kind of thought possible, including suicidal thoughts, okay? So you understand that you know that where I'm coming from, and I know out there anybody who's a survivor or a victim, in this case, will understand that you just can't change that thought process in a matter of 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 15 minutes. It could hang on for an hour. It could hang on for a whole day, depending on what state of mind you're at. So when I say that it took a lot of practice to remind myself not to think like that, and then all the other things on top of that that could happen, depending on what stage your mentality is in your recovery process or not, will determine how far you're going to go in regards to, well, in a negative fashion I'm talking about, to whether you're going to go back to one of your addictions, or you're just going to go back to your home and lock your door and shut everybody out, and until you either, you know, you get past it and then you have the nerve to go out and do it again. But my point being is, it's a lot of work. I'm not trying to scare anybody at the same time, but for myself personally, I had to daily give myself self-affirmations telling me that, okay, Stu, you're going to get this flashback. This is what you're going to do. Either I'm going to have a stone or I have my feathers in front of me, and I touch them, and I ground myself, and I come back to to reality.
Well, there's two parts of that, and thank you for sharing that. I mean, that's very, very pertinent to the topic. There's two parts to that. The one thing is you've been thinking about these things for a long time, and that's why it's so amazing when we get young people coming into the programming and to the various things that we're involved in social media, because it's just not here at the Gatehouse, but there are a number of things that are available out there for people, places to call. And the earlier, the younger the person addresses this issue, feels comfortable coming forward, has the courage to come forward, the more significant it is in terms of time, because you think about practicing thinking. You know, you're talking about now practicing, but we don't even realize that we're practicing for all those times. We're practicing how to have those repetitive kind of thoughts. And what I'd like to do is to provide the listeners with a real tool here. And this is something that I applied for something that happened at a very, very difficult time of my life. And I was... I would say, you know, on the verge of depression, I was certainly anxious. I didn't know how to deal with the situation. And the repetitive thoughts all day long and then at night, not being able to go to sleep, or as soon as I woke up, you know, during the night to the washroom, I'd be thinking this. I'd wake up in the morning, it was just over and over and over again. So again, the mind is reinforcing the thoughts. Repetitive thoughts take up the majority of what we think. And we don't even think to think it. It's on automatic pilot all the time. So this is what I did. One night I actually sat up in bed and I screamed, but I didn't actually let the scream out because there were other people downstairs. And I just screamed, stop. Like, stop, stop. I've had enough. And it just hit me that I couldn't stop it. I had to replace it. And this is a key because a lot of
this
people...
It's interesting how you say this, but I'm sorry, continue on.
Yeah, a lot of people think in transformational, I have to stop this way that I'm thinking, but they just try to stop it. Anything you repress is just going to persist. You know, what we resist persists.
It's going to fester more.
Yes, exactly, because you're actually putting attention on it. That's like if I say, don't think about the pink elephant. You instantly think about the pink elephant and the way our minds work. We give it texture, we give it the color, we give it a shape. We instantly put a meaning to it, or, you know, we attach everything to it to reinforce it. So we've said to ourselves, I'm not going to think about this. And in doing so, we've reinforced the fact that we are going to think about it. So here's what I did. I laid back down in bed and I thought, what can I fill my head with ongoing? And I thought, well, the first thing was I thought, okay, what poem do I know? What poem do I know? And at the time, I wasn't doing affirmations. This is a long time ago. This is even before I, you know, fed my mind with some of that kind of stuff. But what I did was I thought, oh, boy, the only thing I could think of was the Lord's Prayer, the poem, you know, Our Father who art in heaven. Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't matter if you're religious or not. I don't consider myself religious. I'm a spiritual being in a spiritual place within myself, within other people. So, but it was the only poem that I knew in that moment. It's the only thing. I was desperate in that moment, and I knew I had to fill my head. So I laid there, and I mouthed the words. I whispered the words out loud. And I kept saying it over and over and over and over again. And then I just tried to focus it on my mind. And what happened is what I would notice is my mind would all of a sudden be drawn. Because once I stopped thinking about the Lord's Prayer, because again, you don't really have to think about it when we're so here, we're so in tune to that, because we grow up with that. So once that would start to fade, then the other part of my mind would be like, remember what you were thinking about. You know, you would want to bring in this other memory. And then I would have to catch it. And then I would, you know, again, loudly, Our Father who art in heaven. And I would be saying it loudly. Because you talk about practicing. And that's what you need to do. You actually need to fill your mind. And then what I did, and I did this every night. Anytime I woke up, during the day, if it came into mind, I replaced it with that poem. And it wasn't a bring God into my life to replace anything.
It was just a good distraction that seemed to make you feel good when you said it, and that the rest of it.
Well, I didn't care about feeling good. I wanted, because it wasn't what the poem said or anything. Well, it was just to fill my head with words, to take my mind to another place and practice words. Some people count 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Some people try to say the alphabet backwards. I also did something just not that long ago, you know, went through a difficult time and a breakup and was trying to just get control of my mind. So what I would do is I'd go A, B, C, D, D, C, B, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, G, F, oh my God, you know, and I'd have to start again. And it was a game I played in my mind.
Just to fill that space to
It's not meaningful.
No.
It is practicing. It's practicing, practicing. Just like a downhill skier is going to still go and do the weights, you know, and build the lower body strength. He's going to do visualization even though he's not on the hill coming down the hill. You have to train your mind in different ways. And like you said, to catch it before, you know, transformation is about, first of all, understanding what transformation is. And it has to be something measurable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It has to be a shift in your character, personality, how you perceive things that are going on. So you can still, so for example, I use myself, I can still think of something. And that's what I started to say before. I had this flashback to something that happened the other day. Well, not that it happened the other day. I got the flashback the other day. It happened many, many years ago. And I totally forgot about it. I came back. Then it wasn't a very pleasant thing. It's kind of gross because it was about the sexual abuse. And I went, I gave my mind to it. Wow. Okay, I acknowledge that our subconscious has every memory, that they could come up at any time. So thank you. Thank you for the power of the subconscious mind, acknowledging it. And then remembering it, what was it? Okay, I was 6 years old. He was 14, 15 years old. He was in control. I was being an innocent, good little girl, being led into this place. And I didn't control anything, but now I'm going to be 52 next month, and I'm controlling my thought. I acknowledge the thought. I thank for the power to have a memory. And then I fill my thought with something on purpose, very on purpose. Still sort of seeing that thought to acknowledge it, because I can't suppress it, but seeing it and have a different interpretation. And I can measure where my character has changed. And I can actually be grateful that I have the education, that I understand that it's okay to have a memory. I have the tools that memory is not going to take me over, and that is that I can switch it and fill my mind with something else. And I can go, wow, Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, I get to be over here at the gatehouse talking to Stuart, whether, you know, I could have been sleeping a little bit longer,
yeah,
or doing what I absolutely love to do, is read.
Yeah.
And people, I know when you're depressed and angry and filled with suicidal
thoughts.
It is early in the morning, and I'm not working properly. It's hard to read.
It is very hard. And it's funny you talk about reading, because I can't do that.
You choose.
Well,
you choose.
I have tried.
You have choice.
Yeah, I have a choice. Let me rephrase that. I mean, I have tried that myself personally, and no, that doesn't work for me. What I do for myself personally, for example, everybody will have their own thing, what they do, right?
Yeah.
And reading is certainly a good thing. I could probably try that now, and it would probably work for me, because I'm in a different place. But what I distract myself is I just put music on.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I distract myself, because most of my experiences with music have always been positive. So
mm-hmm.
I put to a certain type of music, and that uplifts me right away. And you know, and funny now, talking what we're talking about now, what about the triggers that bring you to think about that sort of thing?
But there was no trigger.
No, but I'm just saying for anybody in general.
Oh, for anybody, because I was going to say it's just completely out of the blue.
Yeah,
crazy.
But no, what about for anybody in general?
You, I think you establish, and you can even do this writing a list. Again, it's acknowledging it.
Yeah.
Healing is about acknowledging. It's not about suppressing it. It's about understanding, creating understanding of what's going on, and understanding a little bit about the way the mind works. So, generally, people know their triggers.
But not everybody does.
When you start to become aware, once the memories
are
visual,
yeah, exactly,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Once you have an awareness that, yes, you're having flashbacks, and that can start at 55 years old.
Yeah.
It can start much later
if
they've been suppressed. Like I said, this one I haven't had this one. I don't even know when that popped into my mind again. And it's just one picture.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have a video.
Yeah,
going right,
all the time.
But it's a snapshot, and it's a snapshot of a view. It's very interesting because it's a snapshot of a view that is not of my perception. It's interesting. It would be almost like, it totally would be. It's his view and his perception, which is very interesting because
yeah.
that the way the mind
plays
works.
Tricks. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not playing tricks. I mean,
well,
we think about. Listen, there's so much more going on than what we're aware of. So I believe that we can be outside of our bodies as well as inside of our bodies, and we have different views of what's going on. And I think that when we're in touch with that, it's like triggers. Then you understand how that serves you. So the trigger, I would suggest if people are aware of the triggers, is to actually write them down. I'm always about getting it
great
outside
idea.
Your body.
Fantastic idea.
Get it outside of your body.
And that all falls back to journaling. Right.
Journaling is, listen, I'm sitting here and you see my book in front of me,
exactly.
And that I'm always writing down notes. For one thing, I either want to forget them, so if I get them outside of my body, then it's there, And, like, I mean, the majority of what's in here I do want to remember, right, of course.
Yeah.
It's a tool to, I think, expand your mind. Because once you put it down, it becomes real. And a lot of the times with sexual abuse, it's been in denial. It's been suppressed. When you write it, when you come into this house, when you call somebody for help, when you go to an event, you are switching from the denial suppression into the accepting that it happened. And I always say that the revealing that it happened and the accepting are the cornerstones of healing and moving through this and changing the perception of what has happened in your own mind. Like you mentioned, you know, when we first sat down here, transformation, part of transformation is feeling worthy.
Yeah.
How can you feel worthy if you can't even get to the point where you reveal and acknowledge?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? How can you integrate it? And that's what transformation is to me. It's integrating what has happened, not suppressing it or trying to forget it, but actually integrating it. So when you ask about the triggers, we need to integrate this knowledge so we are aware that this, if I see a window with a shutter, it's going to trigger me. So when I see the window with the shutter, I say, before it even sends me into the memory, I say, there's a window with the shutter, and that's a trigger for me. And wiggle my toes on the floor, take a deep breath, let it right from the belly in, release that down right out through my toes, go through and put another memory in there, right, another visualization. You can cup your hands in front of you with your palms facing up. Breathe upwards and push that up into the sky and open up your hands wide. And then breathe in again. Take another deep breath in front of your belly with your hands facing upwards, cupping it in. Breathe in and breathe out and push it out. And then every time you see the shutter, you ground your toe, you ground your feet, you wiggle your toes, you put your hands, palm up in front of your belly, you breathe in and you push out. And if anybody says, what the heck are you doing? You say, I'm filling the room with my worthiness.
Wow. No, that's well said. Thank you, Debbie, for saying that. So, you know, it's been an interesting journey. I know from my definitely coming from my point of view to where I am now, but it's been really it's been wonderful to see other people go through the same process and how they grow, like especially from the phase one into the phase two programs that we have here at the Gatehouse. Now, in the phase one program, the last thing we're thinking about is our transformation. Well, actually, we are kind of because we want to heal. We're here. That's why we're here. We're here to heal. But when we get to the second level, that's a whole new process. And to me, that's obviously that's another part of your transformation in regards to moving to another step in your life, which you never thought possible. But that's what I liked about the phase two, how we focus just on that next level. Okay, you've done your phase one program. You're aware now of all your senses. Of why you whatever your behaviors were, and we try to instill into your head that you are worthy and it wasn't your fault. Now you have to take those tools we learned, and we have to retrain ourselves to think, okay, well, we are in fact that, and we are worthy of that, and this is where the process comes in, where we have to start really, really focusing on rethinking our thoughts in regards to, okay, I got triggered, so what am I going to do now? So all these points have to come into play. And do you want to add anything more on to kind of like what I'm saying in regards to that second part of the program that we do here?
Well, we know, first of all, I mean, the first part is for people just to actually get through that and breathe through that is a challenge. I mean, a lot of people come to the front door and don't come in. And it can be very, very difficult. And a lot of people do phase one again because
I hope you're going to say that as well.
Overwhelming.
Yeah. Very overwhelming.
You know, and they can't even do the work. Like, we have workbooks, and it's always an option to do the work or not do the work. And we go through it in a session. But a lot of people, they can't even do the work. They can't do the homework. They do portions of the homework. Yeah, it's, I know several people that just can't even do it. In phase two, you get even in more detail
deeper.
In that, deeper, and it's more free-flowing. But there is still, there's so much transformation that goes on there when, and I think it speeds it up when people can, you know, do some of the work, but that connection, I mean, people sitting together and sharing, even if you can't talk, I'm going to learn from your silence, because when you do speak, say something,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be so powerful. You know those types of people,
yeah.
right? And then other people will be sharing all the time, and there's so much growth in that. But I was reading, as Stuart was opening this up, I was searching for this book that I'm reading right now, and it's called The Quickening by Stuart Wilde. And there was this line, it was the last line that I read this morning before I had to get up and get over here. It says, "The mind adjusts to see whatever it believes. In the same way, your life adjusts to reflect and confirm exactly whatever you believe." So, it's funny the way the universe sent me that, because in transformation, what is happening is you're actually working to change your thoughts, and that's what we do in phase two, is we talk about the basics of mindful thinking, which we have been talking about, which
mm-hmm.
is practicing your mind to think about something else. And we talk a lot about gratitude. And that's, again, a practice to fill your mind with other things. And it can be the start. Every morning and every night, before I go to sleep, I say to myself, what am I grateful for today? Or, you know, based on what happened today. Or what am I grateful for this morning? I want to plant a seed of gratitude. And listen, I did a phase two group, and I was talking to one gal in a group one time, and she said, I don't have anything. I don't like anything about me. I don't love anything about me. There's nothing. And I knew she had children. So I said, you must be grateful for your children. And she said, well, yes and no. Like, yes and no. Like, she didn't want to hold on to that. And because it was her children, I didn't want to plant any seeds there.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, okay, well, she always dressed to the nines. And I said, what about the shoes? The beautiful shoes that you're wearing today. Do you like those? And she had to say, well, yeah, I do like the shoes. And that was the only thing we could hold on to.
Tough cookie, wasn't she?
She was, because she, again, her mind and her beliefs were so set
mm-hmm.
because of the damage that her father had done to her.
Mm-hmm.
He had put her down, just squashed her literally under his foot, and she felt no worthiness. She was using whatever she could use, but she was reaching out. Her mind had this little piece of hope, and I would venture to think that that had a little bit to do with her children,
mm-hmm.
most women,
mm-hmm.
right? Otherwise, she would have checked out. But she was, there's a place called Homewood where people go full-time and
yeah.
they live to help, I think, restructure their mind, their thinking patterns, to give them realizations that they don't have. And she had been there, and still, you know, she was still struggling. And I really believe that you have to get to that first piece of, okay, we know that this has affected us in a number of ways. Trust in relationships. We're going to a relationship seminar when we leave here.
Yeah, exactly.
Today, right?
Yeah.
It's huge. It affects relationships, intimate relationships, you know, relationships in your family, extended family, your friendships, the attitude towards teachers growing up, authority figures.
Oh, yes. The list goes on.
You.
I know.
I laugh when I look at you because I know your story so well.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things, and it's amazing how it affects people. Or what's more amazing is how it grabs a hold of you and keeps you there.
Yeah, you know, there's a part where you have to take responsibility. And I'm not talking about taking responsibility for the abuse, because you're never responsible. I don't care what age you were. I don't care what the situation was. I don't care if you love the sexual stuff that went on and later on you realize that it was wrong. I don't care what the situation is. You're never responsible for somebody violating you. Never, okay? But there comes a time in your life when you are responsible for reflecting on what happened and how that has affected your life. And you're responsible for coming to a point where you have a choice to say, I think maybe it's time to explore what I'm feeling. Not that anything's right or wrong, because I don't believe there's rights or wrong. There are journeys and there are experiences. Again, I'm not condoning sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Okay, but you know me, and people will get to know me as they're listening to what I mean on this. You're responsible for having that choice and saying, okay, I need to, first of all, say to myself, and you can do this by looking in the mirror, if you can look in the mirror, or you can just close your eyes and say, I was sexually violated when I was a child. I'm not that child. I'm in a safer place, because we're all in a safer place if we're away from the perpetrator. Now what action do I choose to do to work through this or have a greater understanding of this or educate myself? And when you take responsibility, like anything, there's a discharge of energy. It's like, if we're working and, we're building something. We're building that cabinet over there. And we're hitting, and I'm holding a nail, and I whack my thumb. And I go, Stuart, why did you give me this hammer? And you go, what are you talking about? You're the one that hits your thumb. And I say, no, but I've never done this before, and why would you give me such a big hammer and such a little nail? And there's an energy resistance, that builds up, and that's what happens, that bubble that builds up inside when with the violation. But if I say, you know what? I am responsible for this. I am responsible for the actions that I did take, the coping strategies that I did take as a teenager, whether I started to drink or do drugs or run wild or run away from home. I'm responsible for that. And that's okay, because that got me through that period of time. But if we're sitting here at our age, we're in the 50s.
In the 50s, the big 50s.
And we go, let's go out and let's just get totally drunk tonight, and we don't have to deal with anything. That's going to come back and bite us. And we're not moving forward in our lives. And you have to move backwards into the past before you can move forward, I think.
You're pausing it in a negative manner.
Yeah, you're pausing. You're pausing. I like that.
Pausing in a negative manner. Yeah, you're just basically putting off which is in your face called many different things, but you're just prolonging what's inevitable.
Yeah, it's going to come back. I was just on a talk show the other day, and a woman called in, and she had been in therapy, so she'd been doing some work, but she was still really struggling. And so we had a conversation, just a general conversation, and I could tell there was a little, vibe in her voice there that she was having some stress calling in. And so, I acknowledged that, of course. And then what happened was, afterwards, or the lady actually that was doing the interview, I had sent her a copy of Unlock the Door, because she always reviews, she wants to have an understanding of what you're about. So she was talking about that with this lady, and she said, you know what I'm going to do for your courage for calling in here today? I'm going to send you this copy of Deb's book. And I thought, oh, that is so awesome, because again, she's being rewarded for the action she's taken. So she knows she can call, she knows there's a safe place. And then what happens, of course, then this woman tracked me down on Facebook.
Of course.
And she sent me a note thanking me for being on the show and talking about this topic that is being taboo and stigmatized. So that makes me feel good that I'm being acknowledged for the work that I'm doing. And then I respond back to her, so she's acknowledged. So it's just when we share and we come out with this, the connection and the healing that then starts to happen. But I have to share, transformation, I have to share this, because this individual, she's in my book as Jenny.
Yeah.
So, part of Jenny's story.
Yeah, wonderful lady too.
Okay, so she's young, I think Jenny just turned 26.
Yeah, she's
got married.
Yeah.